Hey, hello everybody. It's me, I'm Stephen. This is the Bookcast. I'm here with my friends wherever in Melbourne, hanging out at PAX and hanging out in a cool little bar and doing some podcasting. So, hello. Hello, Josh. How are you?
Hello. yes, I am doing okay. I've managed to somehow get up this morning and bring what was left of me and to record, so...
Yeah, I should clarify, it's day three of the PAX, so we're probably going to be a little bit dead. And Troy's here. How are you doing?
I'm also in Melbourne.
Nice.
Maintain eye contact.
Yeah. This is weird now. We can see each other.
I've never looked at you while you talked into a microphone before.
That's probably a good thing, because otherwise I would have seen the cameras, right?
How does this change the dynamic?
I don't know.
Oh, and also, Ollie's here. Hey.
I am. Hello.
What's up?
Yeah, very tired. I spent a lot of time playing Mario until an hour that I'm not particularly proud of, but it's Mario, so...
It's fine. It's not like you had anything to do today.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
So yeah, as I mentioned, we're at PAX, so we're going to be talking about PAX-y things. It's a bit of a weird off-episode. We're going to go off-script. It's going to be bonkers.
Ooh, we're doing it live.
It's going to get crazy.
So, I guess starting with Josh, because you're next to me, it's still weird. So what have been, general vibes, highlights, what's been going on?
Yeah, it's been fun. And it's always nice to actually have things to cover for books. Like, last year was really awkward. Because, the Wii U was being phased out. Indies weren't touching it. Nintendo had just pretty much released their last games for the system, so we're just kind of wandering around. People were coming up to us, getting us to play their games, and we just had to be like, yeah, sorry, we might be media, but we're not the media that's helpful to you at all.
I might tweet it for you.
Yeah, basically. But then there's been a bunch of fun panels as well, which we'll probably get into a bit more detail later on.
Yeah, totally.
And as always, it's good to meet up with people who you've been tweeting for years, but... have never actually met in person.
Yeah.
So it's weird, like, you build up all these friendships without having ever seen the person.
And then we're all in a room podcasting together.
Yeah.
So yeah, any highlights, Troy? Anything else?
I mean, the first thing we immediately did was line up for Doom as soon as we found out it was there.
We'll talk about that in detail, but yeah, it was sort of not known ahead of time that would
be. Yeah, we
not
just kind all. Of found it by accident.
We just looked up and was like, is that Doom?
Is it actually on show, or they just advertised?
Sort of on the side of the Skyrim, sort of advertisement thing, and it's just, is it really there, or is it just this is also a thing that exists?
Yeah, so. Even the line was like, queue here for Skyrim. We're like, I guess we should. And then they walk up to us, hey, who wants to play Doom?
Hello.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Nintendo booth, it's massive. This year,
it
and
is
it's ridiculously
huge,
busy, and that's the best thing to see as a Nintendo fan.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting comparing again to last year. It was, they had a lot more, I guess, events going on because they didn't have so many games to show.
They're not
was...
just playing Mario Kart at the Nintendo
just on the loop.
But I mean, as far as I can gather, they do still have events. It looks like they had some Splatoon things set up, and I assume Mario Kart.
It
looks
like they're doing some Mario Odyssey stuff as well.
Yeah, the ones on stage look like they're hooked up to the big screen.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, they were on ARMS when we turned up, but I can't imagine that stayed around for long.
I don't know, I reckon it might have legs.
How far in are we? It did not take long.
Jumped into an ARMS legs joke right away.
Very on brand for Josh. So I guess we should talk about Doom, because that's what
I'm does Ollie
want
to have his moment to
say? I'll parrot everything that everybody said so far. It's been fantastic, and there's been a lot of fun things to do. Which we will get into in a second.
Cool. So yeah, Doom. I know Troy was excited for Doom.
Yes.
I was excited for Doom. Initial thoughts?
Initial thoughts was, yep, this is 30 frames per second.
Yeah, you do notice that immediately.
And it was really blurry as well, I found, in the dock mode. Handheld, it looked fine. But the dock...
I didn't know they were doing handheld mode, so we might have to go back and try
it. Yeah, it's definitely worth trying. Yeah, I did Skyrim and Doom both in handheld, jumped between all the different control methods and everything. Tried That's to squeeze awesome. In as much as I could in case I didn't get back later on.
Yeah.
Clearly it was still engrossing because you didn't notice me next to you playing it in handheld mode. You were just focused on the TV.
Well, I was playing arcade mode, which I know it's a newer mode that people were hoping was going to come in for Doom on Switch, but... I hadn't played it before.
Okay.
So it's like a score attack type thing.
Oh, I get.
And you just kill stuff, which you can pretty much describe
like
the whole game.
Doom. Kill the demons.
But because I've been playing on PC with 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
So moving to the Switch, I did notice the 30 frames, but once I started getting into it, I forgot.
Yeah, I think once it gets in motion, it's a bit less noticeable. In the opening cutscenes where you're sort of slowly seeing objects move and be right in your face, it's a bit, ooh, that looks kind of like something exported from Microsoft Paint to me. But like once you get, you know, get it moving
needs more
around,
JPEG.
I did notice a couple of frame drops as well. I don't know if you did, but I was in like...
Yeah, I did.
Like, especially in the opening cutscene, I was like, ooh, demons are appearing and things are going
to be fair, there were like 30 demons on my screen when that when it happened, and I get the same frame drops on... I think it was PS4 and PC. So,
yeah. I mean, one of the things that I did notice, though, was that in handheld mode, there were not really frame drops at all. Like, it seemed to be a lot more consistent than anything else.
I think I noticed mine in TV mode as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I played most of the time in handheld mode. So like, I don't remember seeing any frame drops.
Yeah.
Might be the lower resolution?
I'd imagine it probably would be, yeah. I think they're using a dynamic resolution for when docked, but I think it's static.
Yeah, whatever they're doing on TV mode, it's not anti-aliasing though.
No,
it was very jaggy.
Yeah, jaggers all over the joint. But yeah, I don't know. My sort of general thoughts are that if you can, like, if you want to play it on one system, and the fact that it's portable isn't really a factor, I don't know that I'd say go to Switch first.
It's not the definitive edition. But the fact that it exists at all is a miracle.
Yeah, exactly. And I think anyone who does care about the graphics and the performance to that extent probably has already got another console and has already played it. So it's basically for Nintendo fans who are Nintendo diehards who stuck to the Nintendo consoles purely, and people who want to play something on the go, which is always great being able to play these big console games for everyone.
What's also worth mentioning that the start of a console's lifespan, the graphics, and compared to like near the end,
huge difference. With Nintendo, like you see some of the stuff that they were doing at the end of the Wii U's lifetime, and it's just astonishing. Mm-hmm. And like even on the 3DS now, like you look at, like say Pokemon X and Y for example, and it looks terrible in comparison to Sun and Moon and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. So
they're really good at optimizing and
obviously it does take time. So
And I think when you say, you know, Nintendo diehards that only have the, you know, Nintendo systems, that sort of was me during the GameCube era, and I would have loved to play, say, Doom 3 on the GameCube and not have to buy an Xbox for it. So
you just have the fog, like, 2 meters in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. But I can totally see the appeal for that kind of person. So if you have no other way of playing it, or if you want to play it in handheld mode, it's a good way to play it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It works. But
I mean, it was my first exposure to the Doom series in general.
Okay.
Like, I'd never played a Doom game before.
Did you find it fun, though?
It was quite fun, yeah. Like, it is noticeably 30 frames a second, and it looks like it should be more than that. But it doesn't really feel like it, because I know it's polling the inputs at 60 frames a second. Mm.
And it had a lot of motion blur that kind of helped to smooth out some of the, you know, less smooth frames.
Yeah. But it was fun. Like for a first glimpse at the Doom series, I'm pretty impressed with it.
And how did you guys find like playing? As I know, I tried Pro Controller and handheld. Did either of you guys try like both methods?
Yeah, I did Pro Controller and then handheld. But I was playing handheld most of the time because it made it look a lot better.
Yeah.
I think I was worried that handheld would might sort of make it a bit harder to play because the sticks are almost Vita-esque, like they don't have the same sort of range of movement as a regular controller.
Yeah, but at the same time, every time I think, oh, this won't play too good with the Joy-Cons in handheld mode, it's fine.
Yeah, like, I think it's, if you've got a Pro Controller and you're using it on TV, like,
do that,
but you're not going to lose anything by playing with Joy-Cons, it's pretty great.
And, I mean, playing a first-person shooter with a controller is always going to be less than ideal experience anyway. Like, I'll always go for mouse and keyboard in those.
I mean, it is disappointing that it doesn't have motion controls for aiming, because that does a lot to really...
I didn't even especially think about that. In Skyrim!
I would like to patch that in at some point.
The Skyrim. Yeah.
Did you guys use the motion controllers in Skyrim?
Yeah. I haven't touched Skyrim, so I'm really curious what you guys have to think
about. Well, I had some dodgy Joy-Cons that kept disconnecting, so I had some issues with that at first. But once I put it in handheld, though, it was syncing fine. And, yeah, being able to use the gyro for the aiming like you can in Breath of the Wild, it's really cool. Like, when you're firing your fireballs at people and, like, aiming around and using the bow and arrow, that's cool. I think it'll be a bit gimmicky using it all the time for things like the sword and the shield.
Like, do you do, like, swipes?
Yeah,
like
so you can do a light swipe to do a basic attack, and then you've also got the more powerful attacks that drain your stamina, which you have to do a stronger swing to do. And I was finding it a bit hard to trigger the specific attack I wanted on demand, but I'm not sure if that's because my Joy-Cons were really screwy or not.
Or you're not strong enough.
But yeah, it was fun getting in there with your Joy-Cons out. One's your shield, one's your sword. Bashing someone with your shield and switching to a bow and aiming it like that.
That sounds a lot more exciting than what Skyrim combat usually is.
Yeah, like I feel like it's going to make it a bit more engaging, even though it's still kind of the same combat.
Yeah, I'm sure you get sick of it eventually and just go back to a controller.
Definitely, but the gyro aiming will definitely be helpful for the long term.
A lot of people hate it, but it's great.
Yeah, it's definitely like a lot more dynamic, the combat, because like on any other console, it's basically press a button, boop, then boop, press another
left
button.
Left mouse, right mouse.
But like, and like after a while, like because a lot of people have played Skyrim for a lot of hours.
Are you gonna hold your hands up like this for 100 hours?
Yeah,
maybe not.
But
maybe for like, 10.
Even still, like you start a new save file, and you know one of the first enemies that you'll come across is wolves, and after you've played for so long, it's not really, you know, interesting anymore. But with the motion controls, like having to actually,
you can really feel like you're killing an actual dog.
I mean, the HD rumble is quite good.
Okay,
like
it makes you feel powerful. Like when you're using the magic and you've got a little lightning and the fire coming out, it's vibrating. And
yeah, I didn't even consider that.
I also ran into a guard and hit my sword against their shield, and it like sort of vibrates the way that metal does when it gets hit, and it was like, it was one of the best uses of the HD Rumble I've seen, not in Nintendo games.
That kind of sounds almost like the most exciting use for HD Rumble that hasn't been 1-2 Switch.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought Skyrim, just harbinger of HD Rumble goodness.
Yeah, like, I wasn't really looking forward to Skyrim on Switch at all, because I've played it on PC, I've had the good graphics, I've had the mods that totally changed things
Tom's
up.
Tank
feel like it. Yeah, like, some of the mods totally changed the way the game plays to make it way more satisfying and engaging and all that. So I didn't think playing Skyrim without them and without the great graphics and all that would be worth visiting again, but between the new controls, the portability, and the amiibo usage, of course, I feel like it might be enough to get me to jump back in.
Yeah, apparently the amiibos didn't work in the version that we were playing.
I didn't have them on me.
What's wrong? Who are you, and what have you done with Josh?
I had a friend who had it on them, and it just didn't work.
Oh, that's a shame.
But again, like, it's still a month before the game comes out, so
I'm sure it's a last minute edition.
Yeah, or like this is just like the demo version that they're bringing around for a couple months now. So
It's about 14 gig all up, isn't it?
Yeah, same size as the special edition on PC.
Yeah, you were telling me that. It's like same size as the edition with all the like high-res, high-res texture and stuff like that. I wonder
what's
going on.
It's not enough game that it could be really good, but at the same time, Bethesda produced games are not optimized that well.
Yeah, maybe it is by now. They've had a couple of years to get it okay. Yeah. They made all their PS3 mistakes.
Because all of those, well, presumably high-res textures and all of that are already in the game. If they choose to optimize it further, we could get an even better looking game.
It's pretty crazy to think that the definitive version of the game could be on a Nintendo platform.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that Bethesda RPG like this has been on a Nintendo platform ever, has it?
No, like not Fallouts or
none of the Elder Scrolls series and nothing.
I think the first one on console was Morrowind, and that was only Xbox.
Yeah.
And then we haven't been visited by him since then.
Visited by the Bethesda Fairy.
I think they've probably published things, but
possibly.
Yeah,
we're not historians here. Yeah.
What do we know about Nintendo games?
Who listens to this?
I know of them.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll take a bit of a break from games and talk about panels for a bit before jumping back into games later on. Does anyone have any highlights panel-wise, starting with Oliver this time?
I haven't actually been to any panels yet,
dude! What are you doing at PAX?
I was planning on going to the Zelda one yesterday, but just didn't really have the time to do it.
Fair enough.
Same boat.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Nothing stood out to me, and then I'm hearing about all these panels when I'm already, like, somewhere else.
Yeah, it's like, cool, that was cool to hear about half an hour ago.
I did watch a live stream of a panel last night, but it's not really the same thing.
Halfway there. Which one was it, out of interest?
It was the Cheese Live. With
my God, that was so much fun.
Yeah, we have an official attendee of that.
Oh, yeah. They're just right off the bat, it was just a bunch of crazy fun. Like, you've got Jade on stage trying to get everyone hyped up, and they were handing out cereal because Like, you know, back in the day, you'd be eating cereal watching Dragon Ball Z on Cheese TV. And then Ryan's not there, and they try to get him out. And it turns out he was in cosplay as Princess Peach. And that was a sight to behold. And so it started off kind of scripted, like they're doing gags like that and talking about just how cool it was to see everyone remember him and all that. But it feels like they only planned half the show, and so it just went off the rails. It was so much fun. You had Ryan as Princess Peach dancing to Shirley Temple, like doing the Shirley Temple dance. Jane singing. You have them recreating Batman scenes with Jane doing Bane's voice. Then they did a countdown of the top five shows that used to air during Cheese TV. And they're like, all right, let's get up on the screen. Let's go. And they bring up a clip of Aerobics Oz style. Just like back in the day when you're up too early and the wrong show is on. Or too late and What's in the Box is on.
What's in the box?
But there was a bit of an upset in the show countdown because two major players that... Well, I feel they were major players and they got left out. And those were Digimon and Beyblade.
Robbed.
Well, absolutely robbed. They actually apologized for Digimon because they were asking for suggestions of what they thought might be in there, and everyone yelled Digimon, and then they had this hilarious look on their face, and they're like, oh,
whoops,
we forgot about Digimon.
I had it in my head that you ran up on stage and was just like, where is Beyblade?
Someone
Beyblade.
And then to finish it off, they had some and Nintendo 64 tournaments, so we had some Mario Kart where Jade got absolutely destroyed. And then GoldenEye, where Ryan was the one doing the destroying. And they accidentally brought up five people on stage, and there was only meant to be four for GoldenEye. So two of the guys did like a tag team, and one of them was handling the aiming controls and the shooting, and someone was doing the movement. And they were actually doing, like, all things considered, they did alright with that.
Two guys better than one, I guess.
Yeah. But it was just, just so much fun seeing these guys who basically grew up with just, there's a bunch of goofs on TV, and now you get to be a bunch of goofs together.
Old man goofs.
Yeah. Let's not go too far.
Yeah.
Oh, that was another thing. Yeah, I was there with Aaron, who's part of the site community.
Ah, yes, yes.
And, we were walking in, and they were making everyone show their R18 wristbands. And he says to me, why do we need to show our wristbands? There's no one who remembers Cheese TV is under 18. I'm like, that's terrifying. Why would you say something so horrible?
Oh, no.
Just having a moment.
I'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to too many panels this year. I've actually been busy doing Nintendo stuff, which is a wild ride, yeah. But I did manage to get over to the Zelda Universe panel where they had a bit of a post-mortem, but a post-discussion about Breath of the Wild and sort of open slather. We can kind of talk about everything except super detailed ending spoilery sort of stuff in case people come in and be like, I don't want to know these things.
Yeah, they want to talk about the game without actually having finished it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I found that pretty fun. They sort of had some questions. It almost felt a little bit like almost like a forum thread in real life. Like, here is a bunch of questions, and then we'll sort of go through the panel, let us know your thoughts, who collected all 900 Koroks, and hats like off to whoever.
Three people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty much.
But yeah, no, I found it pretty useful, or pretty interesting, just in, talking fairly honestly about which parts, were done really well, which they think might sort of carry on in the future of the series. And I was quite happy that some brought up the sort of shrines and overall dungeon design and how you sort of miss out a little bit on the themed dungeons, sort of cohesive set of puzzles in a dungeon in favor of sort of more separated shrines, and I thought that was a pretty interesting discussion
point. Yeah, I liked that they weren't totally just gushing about everything. They had a few criticisms as well, but at the same time, it didn't feel like they were just forcing themselves to be contrarian for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you do really like a game, you just try to pull criticism out of anywhere, or you've got the one angry person on the panel who's there just to stir things up. And that's never fun. Like, it was people who've genuinely enjoyed the game, and they have genuine opinions about it, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that sort of stuff gets used as feedback to make the next one even better.
And they did have Nintendo reps there, so...
Yeah, didn't they have a message?
They debuted the special video from
Eiji Aonuma. And, just everything went quiet for a while, and you just hear, G'day!
I love this trend of getting Nintendo executives to just... just suck up to us. Yeah. Saying g'day.
Because the entire room erupted.
They had
They had Shigeru Miyamoto, I think.
Pretty sure it was Miyamoto, wasn't it?
Or during a direct.
The Pokemon one they had.
I think they did both. Yeah, there was a Pokemon one. And I think there was. I think there's been three G'day videos.
I remember there was an Animal Crossing one at the very first
PAX. Maybe that's
PAX,
what it was.
And then last year had the Pokemon one where they had the devs
do the same.
Yeah.
Like talking about Australian Pokemon. And they didn't talk about the koala.
Okay. Yeah, I just appreciate just Japanese businessmen talking in Australian colloquialisms. It's like, end of the video, it's just like, thank you very much for listening. Cheerio!
Oh, but, cheerio. Yeah, I like that, like, if it was a much better run panel than the Pokemon one last year. That was really awkward. Half the panel hadn't really played Pokemon.
I just played Pokemon Go.
Yeah, there's one guy who had started with Pokemon Go, and then there was another person who hadn't played since Red and Blue. And so they were trying to do this celebration of the 20th anniversary of Pokemon when no one had really been part of it.
It was really awkward. I was there 20 years ago and then kind of fell away.
And then I love Pokemon. Really,
he's my favorite Pikachu.
Yeah. But yeah, Zelda Universe panel was pretty fun. That video is now public. It was debuted at that panel, but it's public. So
yeah,
I think it's
on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
And YouTube now.
Zelda Universe tweeted it out. Nintendo Australia tweeted it out. If you want to find it, I'm sure you'll be able to.
That video also confirmed that the Champions Ballad DLC is still on track for this year.
They say it, the less confident I am.
Yeah. It's like they say it like every month or so, they just pop in to say, yeah, it's still coming.
I would have
like
thought for sure it'd be releasing the same day as the Amiibo, but there was a recent interview, I think it was with Reggie, where he said it's definitely not that day.
Yeah, it's Reggie, so there's like a 50-50 chance that we'll still get it on that day.
The DLC won't have friend codes.
But they did say in the video, which was specifically for Australians, that it would be coming in summer, which kind of suggests December, because they said summer this year.
That's true.
Okay,
and
so
the
only really
summer in
else.
This year is December for us. So
yeah, that'd be a nice way to close off the year as well.
Sure,
yeah.
December 31st, like it always is.
That's the placeholder date, and then it's like, oh, it's the actual date. That happens sometimes.
Or they'll like have it Christmas morning. Everybody wakes up to new DLC.
You just find the sparkling envelope in your Christmas tree.
Yeah. I think one of the other things they talked about as well was sort of how Breath of the Wild is different to most others in that sort of had the natural way of exploration. That was sort of a big deal of how that separated this particular Zelda game from previous ones. Mm. Just, you know, essentially the standard, oh, see that mountain? You can go there, except you can also climb it. Like, you're not going to have to awkwardly get a horse at a 75-degree angle and trying to inch it up there.
That was one of the things that just kept blowing my mind during the game, when you hit this massive mountain and it's not a boundary. It's just part of the playing space.
Well, I mean, it's somewhat of a boundary just because of stamina meters, but, I mean, it's
it was more like a challenge that you could overcome rather than something that's just, it's basically empty space or null space in the world.
Yeah. Mm. Which they could have just had invisible walls in all those places, but yeah, it's refreshing to see.
It's just sort of better designed, more like actually world building.
I think there's a lot of monolith doing.
Yeah, you could definitely feel the monolith influences. I love the whole thing,
anything that you can see, you should be able to go to, because they had the. They've done that in pretty
I've
much
always
all
been
of
wary when devs say that because of Destiny. And it's like, see everything out there? You can go there.
No, I can see it. I can't
in
see it.
But one of the weird questions that someone asked at the end was if you could take any. If the DLC took any game world from a past Zelda and put it into Breath of the Wild, would you want to play that? And I feel like that you couldn't just do that.
Yeah, like so
like
many of them.
They're really designed to be done in a specific way. It's not just. Like, you can't just take that open-ended exploration feel and then just plunk it into another game. It's got to be designed around that.
Like, so much of Ocarina of Time is sort of built around, there is literally a closed gate keeping you out of this area, and it kind of breaks it if you just climb around the wall around it.
Yeah, it'd be really weird if you could just get to, like, all those spirit temples and things before you've even gotten the three gems.
Yeah.
It's not really... It's something that sounds great in theory, but
they need to build new experiences for this sort of style.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people have been suggesting that they might, you know, move into making like a sort of Majora's Mask of Breath of the Wild. So like using the same engine and a lot of the same assets, but a new sort of experimental kind of story, which I think would be pretty interesting to see, because
you'd have to make the days longer.
You got out of the tutorial area just as the world
has exploded.
Now, that's one of the things that I like that they brought up was how they like this style of Zelda game and they love the game itself, but they also don't want it to become a formula.
Yeah.
They want to see the series continue to be pushed forward the way that Ocarina pushed it forward, the way that Wind Waker tried new things.
Yeah.
And now we've seen something crazy new with Breath of the Wild, and there's a lot of things that we can take out of Breath of the Wild without making every future Zelda game until they come up with something new, Breath of the Wild 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Yeah, it's always that risk that you run when you like move a series into open world, is that eventually all your games are going to be indistinguishable. Yeah, I mean, like, it's happened to Assassin's Creed.
Well, yeah. Breath of the Wild was basically the original Zelda conceptually, just in modern terms.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways
to move forward from that.
Not move forward, but to interpret the original game.
So what you're saying is that next we'll have a Zelda 2?
Yeah. I'm down for that.
I mean more like a different interpretation of the core elements of the original Zelda and from there. But Zelda 2. That was my first ever video game.
Sorry.
But I think it's interesting, like we have seen open world-ish Zelda before with Link Between Worlds, and you compare that to Breath of the Wild. They're both great games, they're both open-worldy, but they're both totally different in their design and style and everything. So even if we do see more open-world Zeldas, there's so many ways they can take it and still make it exciting and fresh.
Well, when they flicked to 3D, that's when they started locking areas off to you, like in a big way. Yeah. And I think that's because 3D was new and they didn't want to overwhelm people with the new medium.
Yeah.
But people are used to it now. So that they can take risks like Breath of the Wild, but if that came out on the N64, I think a lot of people, it would have been a niche thing.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So I guess that's the Zelda panel. Were there any others that I haven't thought of that anyone or that Josh has been to?
Those are the only ones I've been to that were really. Oh, there's one about the future of console gaming and whether we think the Switch will be sort of the standard that other companies will be following off. It's sort of
an aberration.
Nice thing. Yeah, an aberration.
Yeah.
A wonderful aberration.
I always like the description of the Switch is like the laptop of console gaming.
Mm. Yeah.
Where you have desktop PCs and then you have consoles. In the same way that you have desktop PCs for work and then laptops. But the Switch is portable, so it's more like a laptop because you can play at home or wherever you want. So I think when Nintendo was saying it fills a new
niche.
I think they might actually be onto something.
I wouldn't expect either Microsoft or Sony to sort of follow suit, though. Like,
I think Microsoft are going to give up. Like,
I honestly think like the Xbox One is probably going to be their last like dedicated console.
Mm.
They might like have sort of like a.
I can see Xbox branded PCs.
Yeah, sort of like the Steam Machine kind of thing, because they're already pushing towards that unified Windows 10 architecture. So
yeah
we could just sort of see more like budget hobbyist PCs that are just basically consoles, but designed the
PC
same
PC in a box.
Basically, so you've still got that, plug it in, it works, don't have to worry about drivers and all that sort of thing, because there's obviously a massive audience who doesn't want to delve into all that.
Yeah.
Because it would be silly to give that audience up.
But yeah, and I do think, sort of on what you were saying, Oliver, like, I don't know that the other console manufacturers are going to go down the path of portability over power, because for so many years they've been just like, we have the most powerful console. Right now, both Sony and Microsoft are saying they have the most powerful console on the market.
Yeah, and can you imagine all the E3 reels where they wouldn't be able to show off like Naughty Dog's.
I'm thinking that they
definitely could do it because they already have tiered development for PS4 and then PS4 Pro.
Yeah.
So
I don't think we'll see PS4 Lite.
I don't think we'll see that. I think the PS5 will have something like a handheld tier, which doesn't look as good, but it's portable. And then you have like your home console, and then you have your.
I don't know. I think the biggest risk for Microsoft and Sony jumping into that space would be, how many things can you actually fit into your bag? Like, everyone loves the Switch. Would you be willing to... Like, would there be a reason for you to not pack a Switch and pack a portable PlayStation instead when Like, the Switch isn't as nice and portable as the 3DS. So, no. Like, you can't just slip it in your pocket
it's
and then put it in your bag.
Portable.
So that's literally the reason I don't have my Switch with me right now. Like, I just got too many things in my bag.
And, like, are people going to want to carry around, like, $1,500 worth of electronics in their bag at once?
I mean, photographers do it.
Yeah, or like people who want a new iPhone X. It's just like
$1,500 in their pocket.
I think it's going to depend on how well the Switch does
in the long
by the time a PS5 happens.
Yeah,
I think it also depends on like whether Sony sees it important to compete with Nintendo, because right now they're not really competing.
They've tried twice to compete with them in the handheld and just
abysmally failed. The PSP did really well. Like, if you look at the numbers for the PSP, it did really, really well. But then, like, it's nothing compared to the DS.
Yeah, and its cultural impact as well. It's just kind of faded from memory.
Yeah. And obviously the Vita was
wonderful, and I'll hear nothing else.
I traded mine in for... Like, they just made so many...
It was a Dreamcast situation.
Yeah.
Those memory cards are just the worst thing.
I think that's probably... Like, it was that initial bad press that probably started the journey of death for the Vita.
And a lot of the early games did that whole launch title tech demo thing as well.
Yeah.
The Vita had some weird...
What
was that stupid back touchpad? It has never been helpful in any game. And whenever I'm trying to do the remote play, it's always triggering the buttons that I don't want to press.
I tried playing Destiny on it.
Really awkwardly.
There is one game, and I can't remember what it is, but you open a letter by like swiping up the top of the touch screen on the front and the back.
Is that Assassin's Creed?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the only cool thing that I've ever seen done. But it was still just like a garbage moment in a garbage game.
I feel like I have to bring up Tearaway. We can't completely diss the back touch screen because you could poke your finger through.
Oh, that was cool. Funny.
And we'll take photos of your face as you poked your finger through. We're like, what? And then that was your face all over the world.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
The little squirrel asking for a crown to be cut out of paper, but he could cut out whatever shape he wanted for him to stick on his head.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Tearaway was wonderful. Well, I guess... Oh, yeah, go on.
Yeah, I don't think Sony would really need to compete. Like, if this is Microsoft's last console, they've got the console market. Nobody else... I mean, Atari's trying to move into that.
I don't know what they're doing.
No.
Someone calling themselves Atari is trying to move into that, I think.
That's a good point. But, yeah, if this is Microsoft's last console, then, I mean, Sony doesn't need to compete.
No.
It just keeps doing the console game and
it'd almost be like, here's your console, here's your handheld, but also you can play a handheld on your TV if you're at home.
Yeah,
but I think PC gaming is making a much bigger resurgence than I actually thought. Just looking at the PAX floor, 90% of it's PC gaming. So
it's also probably because they can sell you more LED covered garbage, but that's beside the point.
But I think Nintendo's actually clever in they always make consoles that work well as a complementary thing.
I think they know their market in that. Like, they know that they're never going to be the biggest, the best, the most powerful, but they do a good job of making sure that it's still something that everybody wants.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have experiences you can't get anywhere else. Like, you can't get Mario on a PC, no Zelda on a PC.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much every Xbox exclusive you can get on PC now, and buying the Xbox version gets you the PC version. And Sony have their first parties as well, but...
And I mean, even they're moving into sort of streaming things to PC and with like PlayStation Now and the remote play dongle that they have now.
Yeah.
And even then, I feel like Nintendo's experiences are more unique in what they offer from everyone else as well. Like, you can't get anything like Breath of the Wild on other platforms, but you can get things like Uncharted, you can get things like God of War. Even if they're not the exact same, they're similar
kind
enough.
Of
if you're,
on the
if, like, if you want that kind of itch scratched, there's things you can get.
And if you're a Japanese game fan, PlayStation's the way to go.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's Xbox for sure.
I can't
wait for Scalebound.
It's always funny seeing the sales numbers for like consoles, and it's
like single
digits. Switch is like 40,000, and then like PlayStation is like 23,000, like Xbox is 6.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've not had a good generation.
No, not at all.
I don't think they've had a good brand in Japan at all. Like,
in Japan, there was this really interesting article I was reading a few years ago about basically what went wrong and all the miscommunication between the Western executives and the Japanese developers and all that. And it was really interesting seeing the way that
everyone.
They just kind
bumbled.
Of didn't. Yeah, they just didn't really understand what they needed to do to appeal to Japan and
make
even
a
communicate.
Controller.
Yeah, they didn't know how to market the Xbox to the developers to make it sound appealing because they're like, "Well, we've already got consoles to develop for. Why do we need to do anything for you?"
Yeah.
Well, I guess now that we've talked about Xbox for like 10 minutes, we should probably move on to probably the highlight of the show, for me at least. We've got a whole bunch of indies that we've been running around playing, had the opportunity to chat to some of the devs, which has been fun. So I will start with Troy.
Yeah.
What's your number one indie that you've been looking at and want to have a chat about?
Well, the one that I probably know the most about is Projection.
Yeah, that looked really nice.
Yeah.
I was there as well, so...
Yeah, Ollie played it. I talked to the dev.
Okay. What did you find out?
It's wonderful. It's honestly, like, there's a lot of obvious similarities to things like Limbo and Inside, but it's really not anything like that either. It uses a lot of really cool light-based mechanics.
Yeah, like
it's
the whole
about
idea.
It's shadow puppets, and, like, you have this ball of light that you can manipulate and, you know, put somewhere, and the shadows that it casts, you can sort of hop on top of and go all of that. Mm. But it's just... It does the sort of Limbo thing, but it feels fresh.
Mm.
Which, like, you saw after Limbo came out, there was a lot of, like, those sort of games that...
Yeah, the 2D puzzle platformer.
Yeah, but this is the first one I've played since Limbo that has felt like a new experience. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I really liked sort of having a chat with the dev as well, sort of talking about how they had their problem-solving a process of... Technically, shadows go on infinitely, but that would either like completely break the game or make it so easy that it's not worth trying. So the sort of going through the process of working out how long shadows should go for, and you could manipulate the length of the shadows by how close your light source is to the shadow.
It's like an umbra and a penumbra.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm gonna say yes because I don't know what those mean.
The darkest part of the shadow, the lightest
point of the shadow.
Yeah. Ah,
well, I've just been shown up for my lack of shadow knowledge.
Shadowed.
Okay,
I'm so sorry.
So yeah, what did you find out? Are you having a chat with them?
So what I didn't realize just from what was on show is that the influence isn't just like just shadow puppets. Mm. There's a little bit of shadow puppets from different cultures. So there's a little bit of Turkish in there and Indonesian and Chinese because that's where all of the dev have their heritage
sort
from.
Of, yeah, cultural heritage sort of seeping into the game, which is, you know, a really cool way to inform it.
It's fantastic. What else did I find? They wanted the port to Switch because they thought you have like two players, one person controls the light, one person controls the puppet.
Huh, okay.
So having the two Joy-Cons out of the box on the Switch makes perfect sense.
I mean, you wouldn't even have to go into a two-player mode because it's kind of already set up that the right side does the light, left side does the movement, so you kind of...
Yeah, I mean, like, you wouldn't even need to repair the controllers.
Exactly, yeah, it's just...
Yeah,
so
if you don't want to
have your right hand filled with a controller.
Yeah. It's also got touchscreen controls on Switch.
Ooh. Okay.
So apparently it also works on that little pad on the PS4 controller.
Oh, okay.
They're like, don't really
the
use that.
The large button that most games only use out of the button.
It's an option. Bring up the inventory.
So they use it as a select button, which they read off the controller.
Yeah.
So touchscreen support, which doesn't happen that often on the Switch.
No. There's so many times I just forget the touchscreen is even there, except for when I'm entering... keyboard stuff for the eShop.
Sometimes when I go through menus, I'll try it, and then just pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, sometimes. More often than not, I'm like, why can't I just tap the new game button?
Right? It looks like it should be touchable.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that have that sort of like touch-based visual design.
Yeah,
then
it looks
like
it's from a phone.
Yeah.
But I don't want to give away the whole interview, but...
Fair point. Keep it locked to books.net. That's books with a V.net.
It looks like it should be releasing Q2 next year.
Yeah.
That's their goal.
They said not to hound them if it ends up being Q3, because you never know with development. Things happen, but that's the aiming.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a perfect match for the Switch.
Yeah.
Cool.
Absolutely.
I think I would like to hear your thoughts, Josh, because I saw you playing a game called Shots Fired.
Oh, yes.
I was sort this of was, demoing something else at the time, so I didn't really get to see what was going on, so please tell me.
So yeah, it's called Shots Fired, and it was giving me sort of No More Heroes vibes, because you're playing as a hitman who's out for revenge, their wife's killed, you know, typical revenge story.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean. That's a relatable story.
And it's got this weird sense of humour, and you're in order to get the money you need to afford your equipment to perform at your assassinations, you need to work as a photojournalist for... it's called Fuzzbee, which is based off the hit site, I think, Gizmodo, yeah?
Kotaku?
So I just realized why it's called Shots Fired.
And so it's sort of this satirical website where they're working on all these really crappy articles and you need to take photos for them, which prepares you for the later missions, which have sniper mechanics, which work the way as the camera. Okay. And so it's jumping from this weird satirical journalist thing to shooting people.
So you're almost like an anti-Spider-Man. You're like photojournalist, kill people.
Yeah, it's
like kill mode engaged.
Yeah, like a cane, a scout spider sort of thing.
Yeah.
And and the presentation's really funny as well. It's like pretty much all the navigation is done from your phone. Like you travel between objectives using an Uber ripoff. So you call an Uber in, and then you're sitting in the back seat of this car, and you have to scatter through all your files to get all intel on who your target actually is. And it's sort of like a papers, please sort of thing. We have to move all your evidence around and analyze it. You might have a photo of them, or you might only have things like a receipt for clothing, and it might say, oh, you have one brown fur jacket. So you're like, okay, I've got to keep an eye out for that. Or another one, they might have an invitation to a party where it says, make sure to wear red. So you've got to keep an eye out for people like this.
So it looks like the gameplay is kind of the main point where the character of the game comes in, like the personality of it.
Yeah, it's got this really unique feel to it. It's my kind of absurd.
Yep.
It's about being a hitman, killing people, but then it's also got these really funny, charming bits.
I just really love
all
that
these
idea
little
of
disconnected
the...
bits that come together.
I really love the idea of going through your evidence while you're in an Uber or Uber or whatever they ended up calling it. But like, instead of just you can look at this for 30 seconds, it's you can look at this until you get home. Like, genius.
Yeah. Oh, and the other app that you use, the main app, is it's where you get your assassination jobs from. Except it's Tinder for hitmen. So you swipe right on the assassination jobs you want, swipe left on the ones that sound bad, so you get all these little
morbid.
And then once you take the contract, you get like all these text speak messages from your client, like, "Hey, sup? Are you with like the letters free now to hunt my mate MA stuff like that?" And then you respond with emoji, like you've got like the shocked face, and then a guy running into a car with a gun to say that you're on your way to kill.
What happens if you send the eggplant emoji?
Rob, yeah, that was a really weird experience, but I'm looking forward to checking that one out. It was a bit, sometimes it's a bit obtuse in trying to work out what you're actually meant to be doing, but I got a hang of most of it in the short time that I was playing it.
Sounds like there's a sort of routine that you get into.
Mm.
Yeah.
One more day. Kind of sounds like the kind of thing you would play until you're meant to go to sleep and then it's tomorrow.
Yeah. Suddenly it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, whoops. That's never happened to me.
And the other indie game for Switch I got to try out was actually on the Switch. I think it was one of the only upcoming indies that was actually being shown on the Switch itself.
Yeah, only one I've seen.
And that was called Morphite.
Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it's got this really pretty neon art style.
And it's sort of low poly as well.
Yeah, really, really low poly. Like, characters don't have super defined facial features. They're sort of like mannequin, angular mannequin sort of things.
It looks like when you're making 3D stuff, you just turn all the textures off.
Yeah.
It almost feels like Alone in the Dark sort of era 3D, like even going sort of PlayStation era 3D seems too detailed. This is like super ultra geometric shapes. You can see the polygons.
Yeah, but it's done stylistic, so it's not that it's bad. It's like this intentional art style, and it looks really nice in motion. And so there's a mix of defined, handcrafted content for you to do that follows a story where you're uncovering this sort of ancient material that started resurfacing. And it can give you power, but there might be some kind of drawbacks to it. And aliens coming out of the ground and causing havoc. And then you can also go off and explore these procedurally generated planets, which will give you side quests to do, like hunting creatures and that sort of thing.
I did get a little bit of a No Man's Sky vibe from it.
Yeah, it's kind of like
it's
more structured. Yeah, more structured, story-based No Man's Sky. Because you can... You don't fly your ship manually, but you... sort of navigate the star charts, find places to go, and planets have their own characteristics. Like, one might be super hot, so you've got to go out to another planet, find...
one might be super hot, and it'll be the first planet you visit.
Oh, yeah, Stephen will know all about the hot planet.
You walk out of your ship, and you suddenly burn to death, and the dev says, you're a bit of a silly duffer.
There's sort of that scavenging component, where you've got to scan materials and creatures to find out what benefits they can give you, and then hunting or gathering to collect materials. And it also seems like it's got a sense of humor, because one of the developers was giving me sort of a guided demo as we recorded the gameplay. And when we went to one of these procedurally generated planets, the side quest we found was in the middle of this canyon. There's just this weird sort of pod sitting there. And we go over there and we open the door and there's someone in there at the quest. And it turns out it's a portaloo. And there's no toilet paper in there. So we had to try and go on a quest to find this guy some toilet paper, but in the end, we couldn't, so we just had to leave him there and hopefully found some leaves or something.
Hopefully. This poor abandoned on a planet man just needed to do a poop.
But that seemed like it would be an interesting one to check out, and I believe they said it's coming out next week on November 4th, I think it was. Sounds it's already out for other platforms, but the Switch port is coming out next week.
Second. Trying to remember, it's definitely that week.
It's in my recording, so once we put our preview up on the site,
it's on the eShop.
It's in the coming soon section. Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah.
And we might even have footage for that, I understand.
Yeah, so as the developer was playing it through for me, we had our capture card set up.
Awesome.
They thought that was pretty cool, because I don't think anyone else had asked to do that yet. So I had my Mac set up with my capture card and all these cables going everywhere, and they're like, oh, so that's recording. That's pretty cool.
I mean, we just see a Switch and we're like, we must get footage from it, please.
We need some footage.
Yeah, everyone else, like, well, obviously a lot of the games were being played on either PCs on a dev build or a PS4, just because it's probably the easiest console to get.
And we didn't want to capture that because we have integrity.
Yeah, we didn't think there'd be much point in uploading PC or PS4 footage of these games when the Switch could be performing totally differently. And
we know you'll all just angrily comment the moment you see a press square prompt, like, damn you.
Yeah, and we don't want Reddit going, whoa, look, Vox has recorded 60 FPS 4K footage of this game. And they'll be like, no, 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 it's PS4! No, don't cite us! Don't at me!
Misleading.
You know that would happen.
Any other indies you guys have been seeing?
I went and spoke to the people from Harmonious, who made Putty Pals, which Vuk reviewed, and that went up last week, I believe?
Yeah, not long before PAX.
Yeah, really, really nice guys. I don't want to get too much into it, because, I mean, the game's already out, you can read our review, and the interview should be up within the week.
Okay.
But
any choice tidbits?
The main thing is that they are looking at post-launch support, which is a big thing. They weren't planning on doing it, but like the interest that they've gotten from Switch players is that they want more content.
Okay, that's nice.
Included in that is that they're looking at accessibility options.
Well, that's very nice.
Such as a colorblind mode. That's one of the things that I had to ask about as a colorblind person. Because I wanted to do the review, but
yeah, you couldn't.
Because it looks like the game, I haven't played it personally, but from what I can gather, it looks like color does play a fairly important part in the puzzle.
So there's certain obstacles that only one color can go through and the other one can't, and that kind of thing. Which means that for people who are colorblind, it's really not that playable. But they said that, like, even if they don't add more content to the game, they'll definitely be adding things like a colorblind mode. So, yeah, they seem really, really accommodating of what Switch players in particular want. Because they didn't, like, obviously you launch on Steam and gets, you know, it's on the front page for half an hour and then it's gone.
And it's just in that swamp of just general indie section, which, you know, obviously there's good games in there, but it's so hard to find them because there's so many. Whereas on Switch, there's a lot of games, as Troy and Holly both know very well, but not quite as many per day as Steam.
But since launching on Switch, they've apparently had a lot of feedback and... Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty good.
How much of that feedback was change the icon?
Oh dear. Oh, there was a dev the other week, a couple of weeks ago I think it was, that was like having a poll on Twitter for like what icon they should have for their Switch game, and it's like
what a world.
Yeah.
Cool. I think the only other indie game that I've managed to play was at the same booth where Josh was playing Shots Fired. There was something called Original Journey, and it didn't demo terribly well. It's sort of, from what I can gather, it's got sort of roguey elements where you would keep going through levels, go through levels, you die, sort of begin again. But you have this, it looked like a base that you kind of build up as you continue going through. You can take stuff back even when you die so that you can build things up and start from a better point.
Yep.
It was sort of, you are a little sort of tank, and it's just sort of like a side-scrolling shootery kind of thing. It was kind of hard to gather what the whole point was in a short demo. Yeah, sort of you die or you win, and then a robot takes you to the next level. You just keep doing that. And yeah, so they gave us a code for the Steam version, because the Switch one's not out yet, but just so I can get a rough idea of how it actually plays when you can sit down with it and play for a couple of hours.
Mm.
So I guess keep an eye out for that. I think Lila might have some words going up about that once she's had a chance to play a bit more than the actual than the demo that we had there. But yeah, it looked nice. That's about all I can say for the moment. But
graphics are very important.
They are. But yeah, that's about it for that. Were there any other indies that we've missed, or have we sort of covered?
I think there was all the unreleased ones, but it was cool at Nintendo's booth, like the actual main Nintendo booth. They had a bunch of indies playing on the Switch. They had Death
Aussie
Squared,
indies.
Aussie
whole
ones,
Australian there. Section.
Yeah, Death Squared,
really cool.
Golf Story. Was it Putty Pals?
I think Putty Pals was there.
Putty Pals was there. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Putty Pals had their own booth. As well.
Yeah, that was what I was trying to remember.
Yeah.
And there was something else. There was the one that you and I played where you... Oh, no, that was
Death
Squared. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, that was fun to get used to, because for some reason, even though I was using the single Joy-Con, it was synced using the controls as if I was using two Joy-Cons.
Yeah, so you're like holding
it vertically. So I had to hold it about vertically because all my directions were reversed. So I thought, is this part of the game? No, it's not. That's cool.
Just adds to the wackiness.
Yeah. It helped mask how bad we were at first.
It was a little bit embarrassing. You're just like, because we had a rep standing next to us the whole time. It's like, are they going to tell us how to finish this, or are they just going to keep us hanging? And we eventually worked most of these out.
Yeah, we got through all the puzzles and the time limit, so...
Mm. Yeah.
We were all right. Nice. And we didn't have to record footage and put it on Twitter for everyone to yell at us. So
yeah, we're not going to get angry comments on that. Just, we were wonderful at the game, just believe us.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think that's it for indies.
I think that might be...
Is that kind of it for the whole lot?
Yeah.
I mean, we should probably mention that Odyssey came out and that...
Yeah, do we just want to do a bit about Odyssey? Might as well. Since it's
very spoiler free, since I haven't actually touched my copy.
Yeah, so don't talk about the part where Mario dies and he plays his son. Oh.
The son is Waluigi.
Oh. The one who buy two copies.
So obviously we were at the... Well, you weren't, Stephen, but the rest of us were at the midnight launch.
I don't know
Swanson
how you
Street,
were there. Like, I was just thinking, I have to get to PAX for like 8, 9 o'clock. You guys were out at midnight just
woohoo!
Going bonkers.
Party hard at EB Games.
Woo! Yeah, I mean, and then we went back and I think at least Troy and I played for quite some time.
I played like an hour and crashed.
I played until about 5 a.m. and then got up at 7.
Well, so I was there. How were you functioning? Like, how much caffeine / just...
Well, I was working on 2.5 hours sleep the night before.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
You're making me unwell just thinking about this.
So...
But the game itself.
Yeah.
Very good. Despite what some people were saying, you can do pretty much everything without motion controls.
Okay.
There's only one move, as far as I know, that is locked to... Two moves, rather,
mm-hmm.
that are locked to motion controls.
The what? Ones that I know you can't do are making... Can you do the homing throw without motion?
No.
Yeah,
there's homing control...
The
homing throw
downwards throw when you're in the air?
You can actually... You can't do it in the air. But you can ground pound.
Yeah, on the ground you can.
Ground,
you can ground pound and throw it. And apparently there's some sort of upward throw. If
yeah,
you do.
But it's not used in the game. Like there's.
Yeah,
there's
like it's just fun showing off.
Yeah, there's
I can think of some moments where it would come in handy, but
yeah, but
yeah,
like,
you can
you don't
cope
need
without it.
It
but yeah. Yeah.
So what kind of motions are we talking about? Like swipe
your
hands
just,
all over the
it's,
place?
It's
normally just shaking
a
the remote.
Flick in a particular direction.
Yeah. How do you do that in handheld mode? Are you just flicking the whole thing?
You can just sort of flick the whole thing, but...
Fair enough.
I wouldn't say you
yeah,
should be
I just
using
turned
motion.
The motion controls off when I was playing handheld.
It's like, get in the tightest plane and just everyone's just like... Ugh. You can't see me jostling about, but I was jostling about.
But... Yeah, so far it looks fantastic. The photo mode is amazing.
Yeah, I've taken some really cool shots with that.
Yeah.
I've seen some really artistic shots coming through, just like...
I mean, I've seen more memes than I have artistic shots.
Memes are art.
They're inevitable. Memes are art.
Mario in the wedding dress next to the dog with the top hat. Oh, beautiful.
But yeah, photo mode is probably my favorite feature of the game, just because at any time you can just press down on the D-pad and make the perfect screenshot. And it has, like, a little... One of the things that I found really cool about it, it has a little, like, white border around.
Okay.
So it looks like you've, like, printed out a photo.
Hmm.
Polaroid
in Mario Galaxy or Mario Odyssey.
Yeah. It's... Yeah, it's good. And the boss fights are really fun.
Oh, yeah, I love the boss fights. There's so much variety in them. And even the ones that do recur throughout the game, they have enough of a spin on them each time to make them more fun.
So not fighting Reznors at the end of every single world.
There was a fake-out on... the very last boss that screwed me up so many times, where you think you've figured out the phase, but and then they do one more, and you're like, oh, and it was on one health.
And it's not just like the classic Mario style bosses as well. Like, there's one when you get to New Donk City that I was really surprised by, because it wasn't, you know, just jump on the head of this thing three times. It was genuinely like a fascinating boss fight. It felt more like it should be in something like Zelda than the Mario series.
Yeah, because the way a lot of the kingdoms work is they basically act as this big extended tutorial for one of the captures.
Yeah.
And then the boss fight will test all your skills for that capture in order to take them on, which, yeah, like you said, it's like a Zelda-style approach to the game.
Yeah.
And then if you go off the beaten track, there's so many moons you can do along the way that are just hidden in all sorts of ways. Some of them really easy to find, basically just lying there. Other ones have fun challenges. Other ones have these really obscure puzzles you've got to work out. So there's a lot of variety in what you can do.
I think fun challenges might be a bit of a stretch. I was stuck for like 3 hours last night on the snow bouncing race that you have to do. And my goodness, I would just, like, I'd get to the very last, like, bounce, and then, like, bounce the wrong direction lose the entire thing. I was, good 3 hours on that, but I wasn't, like, annoyed. So, I mean, that's a good thing. Like, if you're forced to do the same thing over and over and over again, the fact that you can still enjoy it, like, the 30th time that you're doing it is...
Good sign.
...is a testament to the quality of the game.
There's two things that I really like about Odyssey. Two things that I always look for in every game. Two very broad things. The first one is that there's not an awful lot of crap between you and having fun.
Yeah.
So many games are like, no, these are the rules, and they're really complex, and if you don't follow them, you're going to have a bad time. But Mario's just like...
You're a tank now.
Yeah. Push this button now to do the thing. And, like you were saying, with the the levels are kind of like tutorials for the boss fights, and that kind of goes into the whole show-not-tell gameplay.
Yeah.
Because I just had a bad experience playing, like, Mirror's Edge Catalyst. I had two characters screaming in my ear, you have to do this! And the thing is, my HUD saying, it's over here! And then the thing saying, go do it!
Yeah. And it's like, how many different things can scream at you? It's much more engaging when you've got sort of this more natural tutorial method incorporated into the game, rather than just having all these screens you've got to read through, having
what's
all these
a game?
Objective
it should be
markers
played.
And everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something, it is very cutscene light as well.
Does it have voice acting like Sunshine?
Sometimes.
Kind of.
There's
Mario!
Counting voice acting.
Mario.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. A lot of the characters are really interesting like that. They all have their own sort of voice quirks to them, even though they don't talk.
Yeah, like, this is probably the Mario game with the biggest new cast, right? Between all the new species they've introduced, the new antagonists.
Mm.
Like, it's this really fresh-feeling thing. It's sort of like Sunshine when they had all the Piantics. You had all those characters. And
Wally Boys.
Yeah, and like all these new species introduced, which made it feel all fresh and new, and we haven't had that in quite a while.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I want Shy Guys, though.
I don't think I've run into any. Or maybe they're just really shy.
I was so excited. There's a particular kingdom that you get to when you get to pull turnips out of the ground, and I was like, this is That's where cool. the Shy Guys come in, I'm sure of it, but... Nothing yet.
They'll be in Captain Toad 2.
Yeah.
Well, Captain Toad is also around.
Yeah, I was thinking of bringing that up, but I thought that might be a nice surprise.
No, I mean,
Ruined.
Literally,
I'll just cut that out. It's fine.
Yeah. Cool. Well, before we ruin anything else, yeah, I guess that'll be our thoughts on Mario Odyssey. Our initial first impressions.
Get it.
Our thoughts between.
Also, read the review.
Oh yes.
Look,
yeah. Did it.
Yeah.
Didn't sleep very much for a while. He gets a bit delirious around like major review time because he gets it like 2 days ahead of embargo, and then he's just play.
Yeah, I get a lot of memes from him around that time.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. Probably not so much fun to be him, but it's fun to engage in.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, I guess that's been us. If you want to follow, follow the site in general. We're on all the social bits and pieces, usually at books.net, VOOKSDOTNET. If you want to follow, thank you. If you want to follow me, I'm at Stephen Imson. Once again, on all the bits and pieces, I'm probably there. Josh, whereabouts are you?
I am at Mario Bones on Twitter, Mario_Bones, because the jerk squatting on the single _ variant.
I'm Stew Review, STEW. Review.
And I am Chocobalt, Chocobalt.
Cool. And that has been this special super duper live episode of the Bookcast at PAX Australia 2017. Ta-da! Yeah, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you around next time. Cheerio.
Bye.
Bye.